Hey parents, Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity, set up chores, and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen and Trump voters, it's time for the 100th episode of The Andrew Klavan Show. Yes, that's right. It's been 100 episodes of laughter and tears, rambunctious hilarity and solemn contemplation, heights of joy and depths of despair so deep that only a judicious application of antidepressants and single malt scotch could keep us from gouging out our eyes with a shrimp fork and then throwing our blind, bleeding body into the nearest canyon to our lonely, miserable death. It's been great. Travel with me now back through the misty mists of time to the very beginning and remember how we started with just a shoeshine and a smile, broadcasting from a port-a-san in the rear parking lot of a house of ill repute outside of Reno, using only a paper cup for a microphone. From those inauspicious beginnings, we slowly built our brand as a thought leader and philosophical guide who would boldly steer the electorate from a chaotic presidential campaign filled with accomplished and promising possibilities to the current clear choice among some of the worst human beings ever to run for office in a country where the national anthem isn't La Cucaracha. And yes, it was we, here at the Andrew Klavan Show, who, when brutal acts of terrorism filled the nation with fear and confusion, immediately lifted American spirits by going to a baseball game with a communist dictator and dancing the tango while mourning innocents scraped their relatives' body parts off the street. Oh, wait, that wasn't us. That was the President of the United States. No, it couldn't have been the President. Only a bunch of knuckleheads like us would do something like that. No. It was the President. Oof. Anyway, now today we turn a new page and open a new chapter and begin a new story with new characters and an entirely fresh approach. Or maybe we'll just do another show. Yeah, let's just do another show. It's easier. Forget what I said about the other stuff. Now, with our hearts high and our voices low, with our souls ascending and our pants on, with our spirits eager to answer the call of a higher purpose and our bodies desperate to answer the call of nature, we say for the 101st time, trigger warning, I'm Andrew Klavan, and this is The Andrew Klavan Show. Hey, confetti. Oh, my God. Wait, happy birthday, confetti. Look at that. That was so exciting. We're going to calm down by talking about economics. No, this is important. I mean, aren't you tired of explaining economics to your wife while secretly you have no idea what you're talking about? She's not fooled. She's just being nice to you. So what you can do is you can actually learn about economics by taking Economics 101 from Hillsdale College. That's right. Economics 101 from Hillsdale College. So you can stop faking it with your wife, at least about economics. The free course you can take right now. I'm making Hillsdale a lot sexier than it is in real life, I think. It's a free course you can take right now when you go to Hillsdale. Sorry. Hillsdale.edu/Andrew. That's Hillsdale. I'll get this right eventually. Hillsdale.edu/Andrew. Libs will learn that the left's government down economic policy is all wrong for America and that the free market is the only thing that will save our economy. Hear, hear. Self-proclaimed conservatives will learn why big import tariffs and mass deportations will crumble our economy. So get educated. Sign up for Hillsdale College's Economics 101 for free at hillsdale.edu/Andrew and get a new lesson every week right in your inbox from Hillsdale's professors. All right. Just lost this one. No. They love this. Hillsdale's just one big party, you know? All right. But it is a good course and it's important. So, Oh, goodness. The 101st, 100, is this the 100th show? I can't believe this. It seems like only yesterday we were doing the 99th show. It's just, it's amazing. I have to say, in all honesty, this show has been a shock to my system. You know, a writer spends his life locked up in a room. And every now and again, you open the door and you throw the work out, and then you slam the door real fast to get back to work. I mean, out here, exposed in the world, actually talking to people, has really kind of rocked my system a little bit, especially because you come up against this whole American idea that truth is a democracy. I mean, the whole lie of democracy is that truth itself is a democracy. Truth is a monarchy. Truth is just in charge. It just says what it is. And you can vote, you can applaud. You know, Bill Maher can say something, everybody can applaud, and it's still not true, you know? And I think that that's the thing. And it wouldn't be a problem. I was so ready when we started this podcast. I was so ready because I was so against Hillary, and I thought this is going to be easy stuff. You know, this is going to be shooting, you know, fish in a barrel, basically. And then Trump comes along, and I'm insulting our own audience because of what, you know, they say I've got Trump derangement syndrome, which is so totally unfair because it's not like I say, like, you know, Trump is bad, but Hillary is okay. You know, I mean, I tell you, these people are unfit. You know, Bernie, Hillary, and Trump, they're unfit for office. You know, it's like people go running for cover. All right, so just here's some news. Just as I'm walking in here, Corey Lewandowski, speaking of Donald Trump, Trump's campaign manager, who, remember, Michelle Field said he grabbed her at a Trump meeting in Florida, right? In Florida. He grabbed her by the arm, pulled her down toward the ground. She almost lost her balance, she said, but she didn't. But she was bruised, and she said she was shaken. When the Breitbart site didn't support her, they wrote a piece basically saying, accusing her of lying. Ben Shapiro, our own Ben Shapiro, and Michelle had to quit the site. Other people quit over this as well. They kept, the Trump people said, Lewandowski never touched her. The Jupiter, Florida police have now released the security video showing he did exactly what Michelle said he did. He grabbed her. He came up in back of her and grabbed her, pulled her. She didn't go down, but obviously he roughhoused her, and they've charged him with battery, right? Misdemeanor battery, basically, for grabbing her. So just as I'm walking in the door, I tweet this, right? And I send it out. Vindication for Shapiro. I mean, look, no one here ever thought Shapiro was going to walk away and quit without knowing what he was doing. We knew he was right. But now he's publicly vindicated. While we're sitting here setting up the show, I get like 100 tweets making excuses for this bum, right? It's like, and one of them says, well, Michelle was creeping up on Trump in a threatening manner. You know, Michelle weighs 90 pounds. If she had a claw hammer, and it wouldn't be threatening. You know, it's like Mr. Donald Trump, tough guy. It's like, ooh, a girl, I'm being chased by a girl. So we're all a little jolly here because it's good when this stuff comes out. And you know, and by the way, if you're reaching for your computer to make excuses for this guy, don't do it. So just stop, because, you know, just realize that, like, you know, there's no excuse for grabbing a woman like that. And there's no excuse for grabbing anybody like that unless he's actually a threat. The guy has a history of doing this stuff. So anyway, let's get to the important stuff. Is Hillary Clinton a lesbian or not? Is there anyone who thought Hillary Clinton isn't a lesbian? I thought this is like the big story today. I mean, I just thought she's with, what's her name? Hummus Falafel, the girl from the Muslim Brotherhood, right? Whatever, Huma Abedin. You know, they sit around and giggle. Remember when we convinced people that calling it Islamic extremism was bigotry? Well, now Bill Clinton's one of his many former mistresses. She was supposed to have had a 3-month affair with him back in the 80s. Her name is Sally Miller. She's now come out and she wants to spill the beans about Hillary Clinton. She was a former Miss America contestant. We're not impressed by that. We have our own beauty. You won, right? Can I say that? Am I allowed to talk about it? It's Miss Lubbock, our Lindsay. Our Lindsay, who does our makeup, was Miss Lubbock, Texas. And if you know what girls in Texas look like, you know that Miss Lubbock, Texas is better looking than all of the other states put together. We don't put her on camera because we know what kind of creeps listen to this show. We don't want to put her, you know, in a bad situation. But believe me, if she weren't sitting here, much more of what I say would make sense. It's very distracting. But so Bill had to take this second-rate girl who was in the Miss America, only in the Miss America contest, Sally Miller. And now she's come out and she has said that Hillary had a bunch of abortions, right? So play the first clip.
She had several abortions before she had Chelsea, and it was only because Bill convinced her that if they were ever going to move up in politics, that they had to have a child, because that's what the political analyst had said. They've got to see her as a human. They have to see her. I think in society, they always say, if you were a mother, you can't be half bad. You know, there has to be some love or gentleness or compassion within you if you birthed a child. But that's not true. There's some pretty bad mothers. I had one.
So then she goes on. So not only did she have a bunch of abortions and only had this child as a political prop, right? Not only that, but she then goes on. She says she was a really nasty feminist who hated men. And she goes through this whole thing about how awful feminists are. I have to, just as a side note here, I have to say I'm reading this book called American Girls by Nancy Jo Sales, who is a raging feminist. But the book is pretty interesting because she goes out and interviews all these teenage girls and what their life is like on social media and everything. So I thought, well, let's bring her on. And you know, I sent her word that we would be polite, that I disagreed with her, but we would have a polite debate, and there wouldn't be, I don't do any of this yelling at people. You invite somebody on there, you're a guest. She writes me back this nasty tweet, this nasty email saying, oh, I'm sure you know so much about teenage girls. You know, I thought, well, I married one and then I raised one. How about that? You know? I just wanted to write her back and say, sure, run away like a girl. You know? I didn't have the heart, but so she won't come on. Maybe we'll get Christina Hofsommer, see if she read it, and we'll ask her to come on. Anyway, so this woman goes on and she says, not only is she a terrible feminist, she's a lesbian. What she says is, I'm sure if she was a lesbian, it wasn't much fun because she's so cold. Play, this is number three. Play the third cut.
I'm sure if she is a lesbian, it's not fun.
So where did you hear she was a lesbian? Has anyone told you that?
Bill told me.
Really?
Oh, Bill, because I said, why do you think she is so cold? Why do you think she is so uninterested in kissing and holding and just being close physically? He said that when she was in college that she and some girls experimented and she liked it. And that's when the big feminist movement was moving forward and lesbianism was hot.
Well, let's clear this up first of all. Lesbianism is always hot. Lesbianism, the only reason there's lesbianism is to turn men on, right? That's the only reason this exists. You notice there's never any argument about women getting married. You know, it's always really when people get upset, it's always about gay men getting married. It's like women, like, cool, that's kind of nice. I like that. Anyways, so she goes on. This is the scandal of the week. You know, If there were no Donald Trump, the Democrat race would be as fascinating and entertaining as the Republican race. I mean, they've got, you know, Bernie is now winning. Bernie Sanders, this like weird, you know, Doc Brown socialist, is now winning primaries and caucuses. He won Washington, Hawaii, and Alaska over the weekend. And now he's making a bid. You know, he's starting to say, you know, she's so far ahead because of her superdelegates who have the right to make any decision they want at any time. So now he's saying to them, you know, come on, I'm winning. You know, you could flip. Now, even if they flip, I mean, he's still got to go through New York, where she's actually very popular among Democrats. I don't think he has any chance there. So I don't think he really has a chance, but he's really after her. Now they have this kind of stuff going out, and we're waiting for the FBI. The FBI is still, you know, this is really interesting. The FBI, the Washington Post, yesterday, the day before yesterday, I can't remember, ran a big story, and everybody on the right got really excited. Even the Washington Post is, I just lost my headset. All right. Even the Washington Post is running this big story about, you know, Hillary Clinton. But I looked at it and the story is a complete whitewash. It's all about how, oh, everybody was doing this and she didn't do anything anybody else didn't do. And the stuff was might have been classified, but it wasn't marked as classified. And the thing about it is the reason this is a big story, if the FBI is really on this, and they say they've got over 140 agents on this, is this woman is an influence peddler. As a senator in New York, she did favors for Corning, you know, after her Clinton Foundation got money for it. As Secretary of State, she took measures to allow a Russian company to buy 51% interest in a uranium mine in Canada that provided 20% of American uranium, okay? And in doing that, while she was doing that, companies associated with this company, Uranium One, I think it was called, gave over $2 million in donations to the Clinton Foundation and over $500,000 in speaking fees to Bill Clinton. Okay, so this is the stuff. This is the stuff that's on that email. You know, they don't ask why was she using a separate email. She says, "Oh, I was a BlackBerry fan." You know, it's like you know, reminds me of a guy in 30 Rock who's the pager king. You know, she's still using this BlackBerry. She can't get an iPhone. She can't use the she cannot use the State Department email because she's a BlackBerry fan. That's not what it is. I mean, this woman has been dirty a long time, and that's what I'm wondering. That's what I'm wondering if the FBI has got. If they've got it, this is going to just get more and more entertaining. All right, let's alienate another sponsor. What filthy, horrible jokes can I make about ReaganPrivacy.com? I can't make any. They are here to protect your privacy, which is a much, much needed service because your privacy is always under attack in the modern world. Big tech companies scan your emails and they take out target words and then target you with unwanted advertising. And of course, government agencies are scooping up everything they can get about you and putting it in their NSA files so they can come back later and carry you away. You can take back your privacy by getting an email address at Reagan.com. You get your name at Reagan.com as your private email address. And not only do you get President Reagan's name on every one of your emails, you know, you could just write that on with a crayon, but this is much cooler. It's right there embedded in your email address. Not only do you get President Reagan's name, but you are guaranteed that your emails will never be scanned or shared with third parties. So go to ReaganPrivacy.com and secure your personal private email address, and you get 2 free bonus months if you do it right now at ReaganPrivacy.com. All right, I got through that without saying anything that could be possibly... I'll come back to it later and ruin it then. All right. So... yesterday, we were talking about the fact that the left doesn't care about ideas, that they have gotten themselves so tied up in this idea that any to say that one idea is better than another, one culture is better than another, is bigotry per se. So they can't say, you know, gee, the idea of liberty is better. So they have this now amorphous thing about like just it's common sense. Just, you know, just be practical. Just do what works, as Obama said. You know, do what works. They can't. The fact that even what works, even what they think works, is based on ideas that were thought for and fought for and killed for and died for over hundreds of years, they seem to have forgotten this entirely. And this is, of course, one of the things that is, I would argue, powering the Trump campaign, because now we've got these guys, the Islamic extremists, powered by an idea. They're powered by the idea that they should establish a caliphate in which Allah rules over all of us instead of just over their crappy countries. They say, our country is so crappy, we want to come to your country and make it crappy too. And because Obama is busy dealing with the sun, you know, he's hand wrestling the sun back into the ground so it won't make us all too hot. You know, he's dealing with this fantasy life that he has in which the environment is our big problem and telling us that, hey, you know, as many people die in bathtubs as die in terrorism, which is evil, which is cancer, is spreading. So there's a new report out that says that terrorist deaths have risen 800% in the last 5 years. Coincidence? I think not. You know, I mean, this is the time when the terrorists looked at America, which had been hammering them in Iraq and spending, you know, a lot of people talk about the war in Vietnam and how awful it was. But when the Chinese saw how much we were willing to spend to keep them out of Vietnam, they basically stopped conquering countries. OK, so whether it was right or wrong, it was very effective. And the same thing was true in Iraq. When we hammered these guys in Iraq and beat them, they knew, as they put it, that we were the strongest tribe. The minute they got one whiff of Obama, his sweat, his weakness, his wimpiness, they just exploded and they're back. 800% in the last 5 years. That takes it from about 3,000 plus deaths a year from terrorism to over 30,000 deaths a year. But the percentage in this case matters because if it keeps doing that, I'm not smart enough to figure out what another 800% increase is, but it doesn't look good. I mean, it's not as good as actually wiping these guys off the face of the earth. You know, Pete Hoekstra, of the Investigative Project on Terrorism. He used to be the former chairman of the House Intelligence Committee. He was on with Fox, and he was talking about you know, how this threat is expanding exponentially. So play number three, the Hochstra cut three.
Well, they've got a tremendous amount of weapons at their disposal. Most importantly, they've learned how to use the internet. They've used how to use cyber very effectively. Right now, they use it to propagate, get their message out there. It's a propaganda tool. The second thing that it does is it becomes a recruitment tool. And I don't think it's going to be too far in the future where we see their use of cyber to actually be an attack mechanism to attack capabilities in the West, our infrastructure. The other thing that I think you got to take a look at, the other tools that they will have at their disposal in terms of weapons, are their availability. And this is especially true with what's going on in Syria. I think one of these days we're going to see an expansion in the use of chemical and biological weapons coming out of ISIS.
Well, of course you are. I mean, what else are they going to do? They're going to just keep killing and killing and get better and better at it. And he says that we're not their immediate target. You know, first they're going to do the Middle East, then they're going to do Europe, then they're going to come after us. But they're going to get stronger and stronger, and we'll be the target of opportunity. If they get a chance to attack us, they will. And it's not going to be too hard with Obama, you know, staring into the sun and wondering how he can change the climate with his bare hands. So I'm going to play what I think is the most weird piece of tape I've heard for quite some time. And yesterday we had some really weird tape, but this is weird tape also. This is Bill Maher, okay? Now he's talking to Cory Booker. And Maher, I've always expressed respect for Maher, though I disagree with him and that I don't always like his snide routine, you know, where he just disses everything he disagrees with. But I've always respected the fact that he believes in free speech, he will let the opposition speak, and he knows that you can't be silent about ideas. He understands. In fact, Maher, if he just didn't want to fit in so badly, would be on our side, I'm pretty sure, because he can see what's going wrong. So now he has Cory Booker come on. Cory Booker was the former mayor of Newark, New Jersey, became a senator in New Jersey. He was basically supposed to be Obama with brains, right? He kind of, you know, he's like a black guy. He's cool. He's smart. I think he went to Yale. You know, he's a brainy guy. So Maher confronts him, and obviously he likes him. He's on the same side. This is a Democrat. And Maher confronts him, and he says, when are you going to start calling Islamic terrorism what it is? Now, this is a long cut, but you got to listen to it. Listen to Booker squirm. Listen to him squirm. It's amazing. Play this one.
I think the Democrats risk losing this election if they cannot put together the words Islamic extremism, as opposed to violent extremism. Please just tell me that you recognize that it is a distinct threat, much greater than any other violent extremist threat. You don't really think it's on the same order as the KKK?
Well, first of all,
are you really worried about the KKK?
Well, what I'm worried about is that you began that question by saying the Democrats will lose if. First of all, the Democrats lose because of how they talk about this extremism, then they've got more problems. My party right
Maybe
now...
Maybe that's their biggest problem. Maybe that's what will lose the election. If there's a terrorist attack, what if this was LAX instead of the Brussels airport? I mean, 45% of Democrats already, if you take Trump's name off his proposal to ban Muslims coming into this country, agree with it. Democrats.
Right. And so... Look, this is a threat like no other, and it's one that literally keeps me up, working on like no other. But I also understand, and I'm not creating a false equivalency here, but since 9/11, we've lost 48 Americans, Boston bombing, Christian walking into Planned Parenthood in Colorado, massacring people.
But
people
Christians walking into, are not trying to get a dirty
and I'm
bomb. False equivalency.
But I'm not trying to create the false equivalency. I'm saying that when you say to me that this is the only threat we should be taught, that we
I'm
will
not
lose,
saying only.
No. That we will.
I'm saying it's distinct,
right,
and different and bigger.
And so
size matters.
And what I'm saying to you is, I am. As a senator, spending an extraordinary amount of time focusing on that. But what frustrates me is here you and I are having a conversation when we pivoted off of Newark, but I've got kids with lead poisoning in the water in Newark. I've got poverty, that people working full-time jobs.
Different issue. We got to walk at the same time.
So what I'm saying to you is that I think what Americans are hungering for is a vision in which we can manifest our strength as a country by focusing on the whole panoply of issues. And if we
fear is important to people.
And fear mongering is weakening to
mongering if there's an attack.
It's like trying to get an eel. It's like trying to hold an eel. You're slippery. You know, it's like, well, I'm not trying to make a false equivalency, but what about that Christian guy who killed some people? You know, that's, and Mar very quietly just keeps trying to grab the eel. You know, yeah, that is a false equivalency. That's exactly what it, and then he starts talking about poverty. He starts talking about poverty in Newark. I mean, it's an amazing, amazing video. If you think, I mean, and Mar is right. If you think this stuff doesn't make people crazy, listen to people talking about Donald Trump. Listen to this is the source of Donald Trump's power. You know, I mean, Andrew Breitbart once said of Rush Limbaugh that the mainstream media lies are his jet fuel. You know, that in other words, that's what makes Rush so powerful. If the mainstream media stopped lying, you know, Rush is a brilliant broadcaster. He'd find something to do, but it'd have to be something kind of different because he just lives off that. Well, Trump lives off what you were just listening to or watching. He lives off this. These guys, they can't say it. They want to. They can't do it. They cannot describe what we all see in front of our eyes. And that's what gives Trump so much power. So I'm looking at Milo Yiannopoulos, and I've only spoken to Milo once. I interviewed him basically when I did that video about Gamergate, because he was a big Gamergate guy, and he's kind of blown up, and he's still on the Breitbart site, and he's supporting Donald Trump, whom he calls daddy, because Milo is a flaming gay guy. I think he himself would say that. I think he would support that description of himself. He's a flamboyant gay guy, and he calls him daddy, and he says, you know, this is an important, he's basically making the argument that this is an important cultural moment to strike back against the political correctness that has strangled thought and strangled speech and was just there visibly and audibly strangling Cory Booker as he tried to not say what everybody says. So play the second Milo cut where he tells you why he likes Donald Trump.
This election is the first election in American history that is being fought not on foreign policy and not on economics. It's being fought culturally. It has been stirred up by a cultural figure, by a reality TV star, by an American icon.
Yeah.
I've come around to believe that actually having Trump in the White House would be wonderful. And if he finds himself in the White House and isn't able to achieve very much, Daddy's going to build the wall, and Daddy's going to fix trade, and that's going to happen. If then things start locking up, mm-hmm. because he's got a non-compliant, you know, left and right in all of the various machinery of government, I don't see that as a particularly bad thing. One of the best presidents in history was Coolidge. Why? Because he did absolutely nothing. Having like a Coolidge with bluster would be no bad thing.
I actually enjoy Milo. I think he's articulate. He's funny. He understands the media really well. But just because you understand the culture of celebrity, just because you're ironic about the use of the media, doesn't mean you're still not stuck in its logic. Okay? The president is actually not a celebrity. The president actually has a job to do. And the fact that he represents, and Trump does represent, the truth. He represents people who will speak their mind, and we need so desperately for people to speak their mind. That doesn't mean he can do what he says he can do, and it doesn't mean that he is fit to hold office. I mean, I've been very honest. I think he's a low thug who is not fit to hold office. I think calling for people to be beaten up from the stage, I think insulting people's wives, you know, physical insults and all this, it's just beneath the office of the presidency. We're back to ideas. You know, these guys have to have ideas. You know, one of his chief strategists resigned, a woman named Stephanie Sigilsky, and she cites right the other day after the Pakistani attack, and this is when they went after openly Christian women and children. They went to get Christian women and children celebrating Easter. That's how bad they are. And Trump tweets, another radical Islamic attack, this time in Pakistan, targeting Christian women and children, at least 67 dead, 400 injured. I alone can solve, Trump tweets. And that was it for Stephanie. She quits. And she says, you know, he never meant to be president. He just meant to come in second and increase his business career. And she says, She says she wrote an open letter to his supporters. She says Trump never intended to be the candidate, but his pride is too out of control to stop him now. Give him the biggest gift possible. Stop supporting him. This is not how foreign policy works for anyone ever. I alone can solve. Superhero powers where I alone can solve problems are not real. They do not exist for Batman, for Superman, for WrestleMania, and definitely not for Donald Trump. And so what she's saying is the same thing. You know, every good thing has a satanic version. Every good thing has a satanic version, right, that turns the truth into idolatry. Free speech is a great thing, but it can turn into an expression of your worst self, where you feel like, I'm speaking my mind. Where you think like, you know what? Change your mind. Change your mind. Change yourself so the words that come out of your mouth don't debase you, you know? And fame. Fame becomes celebrity. You know, fame, the idea of fame is a beautiful thing. It's the idea that if you do something really important. This is why I became a writer, right? I wanted to write things that affected people. I didn't really care if they saw my face. I didn't really even care if they remembered my name. I cared that they read my books. That's fame. Fame is when you do something that is worthwhile. Abraham Lincoln is famous. Celebrity is the satanic version of that. It's where you're famous for just being there. And none of us is worth that. Not one person, not one of us is worth that kind of recognition. I mean, I don't care if you're talking about Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill is famous for what he did, for who he is. He's interesting, okay? He's interesting, but you do not... And Trump is a celebrity, and the idea that a celebrity can save us by shattering our culture and changing our culture, it's just ridiculous. The presidency is a job. The campaign for the presidency is a job interview. Okay, you're looking for someone who can do the job. If you ask them, if these guys came in and wanted Hillary, Bernie, Trump, if they came into your company and they wanted a job in your company, would you give it to them? I don't think so, okay? It's just a job interview. If you're looking for a savior, you're looking in the wrong place. All right, that's our 100th show. I'll throw a piece of confetti in the air. Let me do our 100th stuff I like with more or less. I wanted to do some books, some nonfiction books or nonfiction works that are good for conservatives. I do this one with misgivings. This is one of my favorite books. I've actually read it twice, and it's like 800 pages long. It's called From Dawn to Decadence by Jacques Barzin, one of the great cultural critics of the 20th century. He wrote it when he was 90, and it is his masterpiece. I read it on a trip to Alaska, and it was such a big, heavy book, I had to leave it because I couldn't carry it around Alaska, and then I had to rebuy it so I could read it again. That's how much I love it. Now, I want to tell you, I gave this to Shapiro. I forced it on Shapiro, and I don't even think he finished it. He thought it was too thick, too hard to read. So maybe I'm recommending something you won't like, but take a look at what it does is it describes Western culture from the Protestant Reformation to basically today, from dawn to decadence, when he believes it is decaying. And he believes, you know, it will cycle back, but now we're in a period of decay. It is such a beautiful description of the series of ideas and events that affected, that created us. These ideas that Obama thinks don't exist. These ideas that created us and the left has completely abandoned, and that the right is in danger of abandoning now. From Dawn to Decadence by Jacques Barzin. That's it. We'll be back for 101. We won't stop. Won't stop. Whatever. I'm Andrew Klavan. This is the Andrew Klavan Show. Come back tomorrow. We will do it again.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list: teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.